It's Nevada Backcountry time on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. What a weird winter, Dave. I finished trucker season in a t-shirt. Yeah.
It has been. We've got to, as much as I think we're all enjoying these 60s.
Oh, yeah.
I've been outdoors shooting my bow and getting my numbers dialed in like months ahead of time. And I'm just having a good time building a new bow and just, it's great. It would be nice to get some weather, though.
Oh, we're going to have to.
We're going to have to. It wouldn't be bad to have it like right before spring kicks in, get a nice...
That Miracle March thing?
Yeah, get a nice hammer in for a bit, because then the green up always seems to be like awesome.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. Those later winters, like heading towards spring, tend to do better. But here's why I got thinking about the winter. Not just it was fun playing bocce ball this last weekend in my swim trunks and flip-flops. That was nice on the front lawn. Nice. But I got thinking about it. I got the Guzzler build schedule for 2026. And you know what I got thinking about? Standing there in my flip-flops and swim trunks throwing bocce balls around the yard. I was like, man, Guzzler builds, yeah. I wonder if Guzzlers have water right now.
Yeah, because there's those two that we went to this last year that were empty, that nothing in them.
Right.
They were just built.
Right.
Brand new, just built units. So, yeah, I mean, how are they going to look this year if we don't get at least
some sort of winter?
Yeah, some kind of winter, or at least a rainy March.
Yeah.
You know, something to fill those things up. Because these new Guzzlers are pretty impressive. If no one's got to see one yet.
Oh, and they should. Yeah, everybody should do it at least once.
Well, they've got, you know, the four 500-gallon drinker, the tanks.
Yeah.
That's a lot to fill.
Yes.
You know, that's a lot to fill. But yeah, no, the Guzzler build schedule is out.
I know they put out the like kind of one sheet flyer on them. I printed out the little more of a detailed breakdown of where they are, how far it is from Reno, so on and so forth. But I noticed on some of them, there's some big collaboration this year from companies like Go Hunt. There was another one that, of course, I'm not going to find right now. I thought there was one more on there that was partnered with like a bigger corporation, but...
Yeah, there is. I know Go Hunt's got one going on. I think that's the Gabs one in spring. That's the one in March.
No. The March 7th and 8th is the Go Hunt one. That's the one down there in the Muddies.
Oh, okay.
But I think you're right. So what I wanted to say is I think I printed this out, but when I first looked at it, I thought there was another partnership with some big company, and that was the one out in Gabs. But I don't know.
Yeah, I know there's a big company that's assisting as well as Go Hunt. So there's some really cool opportunities out there. And then, you know, there's a few Guzzler builds that aren't on the spring schedule that are going to be happening in February.
Oh.
And, early February. So there's February 7th and 8th, potentially. I mean, all of these earlier ones are weather-dependent. The 7th and 8th sounds like it's pretty much a go.
Okay.
Since it's going to be in the 60s. But that is a Guzzler build on the Nevada Test and Training Range.
Oh.
It's a volunteer build project, early in this season.
Who's doing that?
It doesn't say who's doing it.
Okay.
It doesn't say like...
Partner organization.
Yeah, and I'm assuming the military's probably assisting the funding and stuff for that. Something like this was probably to keep the animals off of particular portions of the test range, most likely.
Oh.
Kind of keep them...
Use the water.
Use the water to keep them in a certain location. And then there's another possible one later in February. Doesn't have a name. It just says a volunteer opportunity build. It was listed to do it in late January, but now has moved to later in February. So just need to get onto the website to check that one out. But getting into the ones that are actually on the
NBU
on
list.
The NBU list.
Yeah, that's what I go
NBU
off
list.
Of.
Yeah. We have two spring builds, two late spring and early summer builds.
Yep.
And then four summer builds.
In June, one in July, and one in August. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll rip through them real quick for listeners. March 7th and 8th is going to be the one down in the Muddies. March 14th is the one in Gabs that we thought there was a sponsor or something, but I don't have all the details on that. April 25th is in the Candelaria Hills. Comiva Valley is May 16th. June 6th is the Clan Alpine build. June 27th is in the Leech Range. July 25th is going to be in the Snake Range. And then August 15th is in the Pancake Range, which we've actually talked about a lot because they were moving sheep into that range.
No,
right?
Out.
Out of that range.
Yeah, so you've got the Northern Pancakes is not affected. That herd's good to go, but it's proposed to depopulate that Southern Pancake population.
Oh, okay. So then they're probably, this August 15th one is probably going to be in that North Pancake Range to try to suck most of those sheep up there.
Yeah, try to probably to keep those sheep in that particular area. So
if you go to MBU's website, you look at the Guzzler build list. Here's what I liked, because this is how I have to sell these at home to my family.
Yeah.
They give you how far every build is from Reno.
Yeah.
So
it's
right,
cool.
Yeah. So instead of the, well, how far of a drive is it? And we have a joke at my house. Everything for me is about four and a half hours.
No matter what, you're like,
no
yeah,
matter
about
what,
four and a half.
Yeah,
hour.
It's either an hour or so. These are my answers. An hour or so, about four and a half hours. That's just my range. I'm like, it doesn't matter
that
if it's garbage
it,
or I'm like, about four and a half hours.
Yeah, that, I mean, that does kind of cover it. I mean,
most
an hour or so takes you 2 to 4 hours, and then four hours, four and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little longer.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
So now at least at home, I can say, oh, this one is 124 miles from Reno. That would be my hour or so range.
Exactly, yeah.
This one is 480 miles from Reno. That's my four and a half range.
Right. You're good. You're good. Now, so they've got that one on June 6th in the Clan Alpines, which they're highlighting. It is a families with youth is encouraged.
Yeah, the youth family guzzler build.
The youth
build.
Family
yes.
guzzler build. Yep. That's so.
Kids can
try
win
to
a
get
bunch
one,
of stuff, too.
Dude, yeah. If you want to get out there, and I mean, I think it's so, you guys, people should get out there at least once and try one of these builds. It's actually a lot of fun. It is a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun to get these things dialed in. And it's, you know, over the years, the
they feed you great.
And NBU and partners have really got this nailed down. I mean, when you see one of these things out there, you're thinking, oh man, that must have taken them weeks to put this thing up. No. It's 2 days.
Yeah.
2 days and it's done. So it's impressive. It's really impressive. So, you know, and some of the big, these are all big game guzzlers that we mentioned.
Oh, right. Do you have
these
any of the small game stuff?
There's no list on small game. I know there is some maintenance stuff going on with small game guzzlers. So that is going to be, they haven't set that schedule out yet, I don't think, on small game stuff. Small game guzzlers are, man, you can put those things up in
just about anything.
It's quick.
Now that you bring up the small game guzzler thing, are those going the way of the dodo, or are they going to keep? They're going to keep maintaining and putting new ones in.
Yeah, I mean, slowly but surely. The reason that doesn't get the publicity and some of these big game guzzlers and stuff,
right,
because it doesn't take a lot to put the small game ones in. Right. Nothing like putting a big game one in, where you've got the fencing around it. I mean, this is, you know, there's a little containment area around it. It's pretty quick, so it's not like, hey, we need 10, 15, 20 people to come help. It's no, our guzzler crews, our summer guzzler crews can rip these things, put two or three of these things up in a weekend.
Thinking about it, and just coming off the heels of chucker season, I see more small game guzzlers in disrepair and just, they just don't seem like they're maintained now. Maybe that's just Northern Nevada. I know as I'm thinking about it, I know whatever it is, Quail Forever or whatnot.
Yeah.
They did a bunch of stuff down south. I could see down south, but I'm thinking of the spots I like to hunt chucker and stuff, and I'll see old broken small game guzzlers, but man, most of the time those springs and there's water in there somewhere, which is why it holds birds. I've never had a ton of luck around those areas where it's dry and there's one small game guzzler. I don't know that it holds birds as well.
Yeah, well, I've got some
lay it on
data.
Me, Dave.
I've got data on that. You know, the thing is, like, as you brought that up, if you do, because I did on both my elk hunt and my desert sheep hunt, I came across guzzlers that had some, they needed maintenance. They needed some work done. My sheep hunt, I don't know how it happened, but two of the water tanks lids were gone.
I remember you saying that. Yeah.
I don't know how, because they're massive screw-on lids. Two of them were gone. So we fished out some dead critters that were in there, and then we contacted Endow and let them know. And they sent somebody up there, and the lids were back on. When we went back out for scouting the next weekend, we hiked in there, and lids were on. Letting them know, like, if you are out there and you see a guzzler that's in disrepair, and you know, it looks like it was active at some time, take some pictures of it, hit it on your GPS or your Onyx or whatever it might be, go hunt or what have you, and get that information to them. So that they
even
can,
for small game stuff?
Even for small game. Any guzzler you see that was at one time a guzzler, at least if you take pictures of it and give them a coordinates to it, they can get it on their list. Because you got to remember, back in the 80s and such, BLM and other organizations, Department of Wildlife wasn't the only people throwing guzzlers up.
Oh, right.
BLM put them up. I think Forest Service put them up. I mean, a lot of other NGOs and federal agencies put guzzlers up.
Okay.
And a lot of them now don't have guzzler programs. They've just completely like, we're out of it. We're out of this game.
We're out of this game.
So they've provided locations for guzzlers. So Endow's been, over the years, have been hitting certain ones and seeing, okay, is this still a viable location?
Okay.
So, were you with me when we hiked into the one up near Molly's Nipples?
Well, I don't know, Dave. We hiked into a handful on your hunt.
But this
was it
one,
scouting or during the hunt?
This was scouting.
Okay, maybe not then. Yeah.
But this one was completely in shambles.
It's on the book.
It's in the book. It's on your Onyx. It's on everything. Yeah, I don't think that thing has worked in 20 years.
One of the old, like, black plastic tires?
Tires on it, black plastic thing. So I took a bunch of pictures of it, sent it in. You know, they said, okay, yeah, that one's been decommissioned. The new one is X amount of distance away, and it's right here. That one's been it's gone. And they were going to send folks out to, like, get some of the
crap out.
Yeah, because there's plastic pieces flopping around and a couple tires and big rocks. But helping them out, because they can't get to all of these things.
All right, hey, we got a little more to get to on guzzlers when we come back. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And thank you to Rightful Liberty Arms for sponsoring the show. Hey, welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. And thank you to Battle Born Tree Service, for hunters by hunters, for sponsoring the show. Dave, when you initially, we were kicking around ideas for show topics, you said, hey, we need to do a show or at least a couple segments on guzzlers. And I went, yeah, I like guzzlers. I built a guzzler. I could talk about guzzlers for a little bit. I did not realize how much there is on guzzlers in the state of Nevada, down to, I mean, even just what species use them, how much they use them. And over the break there, you mentioned something to me. If you had a thought at the end of last segment you wanted to keep going with.
I forgot what it was.
Perfect. Hey, that break,
it helps.
But you said antelope have a high, or guzzlers put in specifically for antelope don't do well, or antelope don't use them that much.
Yeah, so this was a study done, you know, in the western states, because all states pretty much in arid environments use guzzlers.
Oh, yeah. Family back east has no clue what a guzzler is.
No idea what a guzzler is. And it's either guzzlers or like spring development, like modifying springs for benefit. Guzzlers seem to be better for our state, because it is so arid, sometimes springs go dry and other factors. But yeah, so it was shown that antelope have a propensity not to use big game guzzlers, because they are so, and it really depends on the location. So moving forward, location, when you are designing a guzzler specifically for pronghorn, is to place it in a more open area. For one, you know, if you know pronghorn, generally they do not jump over fences. They go under everything. When you put them inside the fenced area of a guzzler, they get super nervous, antsy, like they're trapped.
Ah, Okay.
So they have a less of a propensity to go under that fencing
right.
to get the water.
As I learned this last summer doing that guzzler build, the spacing on those bars on the fence is very scientifically calculated.
Yes.
So that what's the antelope go under, deer go over, and sheep go through or something?
Yeah, so sheep will like go through the middle.
Right, and they've got it spaced so they can fit.
So they can squeeze through there. Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, they've got it all figured out.
Yeah.
Super
yeah.
figured out.
It's not just like, let's throw up a fence and call it good.
Right.
They know to the inch what those bars need to be apart and everything.
Exactly, yeah. So some of the studies showed that when they put the drinker, which makes no sense to put it outside of the containment area.
No, because then
cows
ferals.
And everything else can use it. But in this study, they put a drinker outside.
Okay.
And the animals, they put a drinker inside and outside. So they had two. The pronghorn went to the outside one almost exclusively. The deer in the area and stuff used the one inside the containment area.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, oh, well, duh, they're going to use the one outside. It's the easiest one to get to. Well, the deer went to the inside one. They say it's a visual thing, but as the study went on, it showed us in large open areas where they can see for miles, then they use the containment area a lot more.
If you think about it, all right, as I sit here kind of thinking over the years, you know, I have not seen a ton of antelope on guzzlers. It's mule deer, elk.
Sheep.
But yeah, I really haven't. And you know what's funny, Dave? As I'm sitting here thinking about this in real time, it's always good to do a radio show and have to think through things in
right.
real time. But
yeah.
I think about that unit up there where my cow elk tag was. You've got crystal clear, cold creeks.
Yeah.
But they're down in that thicker timber stuff. Antelope won't, they don't go down
to
those creeks.
They don't like that stuff.
They'll suck one of those muddy ponds up on top dry. And that's where we saw all of
them.
Yeah,
those old semi-truck, like combine tractor trailer tires
yeah.
that are filled with hot water.
Right.
Yeah, the antelope were pounding the daylights out of those things. And then 200
perfect
yards away,
creeks.
Yeah, 200 yards away in the trees is a creek.
Yeah.
That is freezing cold water, but they...
No interest.
They have no interest in going into that congested area.
You know, the stuff you observe over the years, but you don't log away is important.
Until it kicks off.
Until you point out, like, oh, there was a study in there. Yeah, go ahead. Anyway, sorry, sidebar for a minute. Yeah.
So, a lot of people have asked at times, like, why? What's so important about a guzzler? Who cares? Putting a guzzler up?
Oh, yeah.
Some of the benefits of guzzlers is it allows animals to occupy and use suitable habitat
right.
that doesn't have water. That we have a lot of that in the state where there's suitable habitat, but we don't have animals there because, you know, they need water.
When you say suitable, like feed and cover, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Feed and cover. Because
just no water.
Yeah, your natural yearly cycle of snow and rain and stuff have that beautiful growth.
Right.
And that's why we've got sedge out there and sagebrush and bitterbrush and all this other stuff out there that they've learned to grow in these arid communities. But if there's not water for the animals to come in and utilize that habitat, they're not going to come in.
Right, right.
You know, they're not going to travel all that distance and then not have anything to drink. So it utilizes that. It helps with management and it's used as a really good conservation tool. Also, it's like drought resistant.
Yeah.
You know, when those tanks fill up, you got 2,000 gallons of water that slowly fills a drinker. As the drinker depletes, it autofills itself. You know, it has a balance there. And some of those things, when they're full, they can last 2 or 3 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, they can last a significant amount of time.
And the way they build them with that catchment, I mean, I'm sure there is some evaporation, but compared to like a little pool of water out in the desert somewhere,
right.
they are fairly resistant to that evaporative effect.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly. And it may not rain, it may not snow or something, but when there's cold weather and you get that
condensation,
they get the condensation
rolls
on the apron.
Down that thing.
It still rolls down and drops a couple gallons because those they're pretty large. So that always is nice. It has a great benefit. Some of the things, cons to guzzlers, it has potential of changing the migratory patterns of animals because now in some locations they instead of seasonally being there, they're staying year round because they have their food, they have their water, and they're content.
So bigger impact on the environment in that one specific area.
Yeah, yeah. It can have an impact because the some areas not allowing the feed to regenerate, to green back up and stuff. So there's that also. Predators are smart, and predators have realized that these water sources are great ambush locations.
Yep.
So you've got your pros and cons, but I think from all the stuff that I've read, there's a lot more pros than cons. I mean, you're going to have pros and cons with anything you do.
This fairly minimal, it seems.
Yeah, you know, there's certain things. Anything's going to start changing migratory patterns that none of us have control over. Fire, putting in a highway, adding another Starbucks, you know, a couple hundred yards down the road. I mean, all of that stuff is going to have impacts.
That we
can't really determine until the impacts have already started. And that's when the light bulb turns on, like, oh, the system changed this way.
People can go to Nevada Bighorns, NBU, and get their schedule. Does NDAO, like some of these smaller maintenance projects and guzzler builds or whatever that are kind of NDAO specific, does NDAO accept volunteers to go on those?
Yes. So even with these NBU volunteer programs or NBU, so NBU is partnering with NDAO.
Oh, always. Yeah.
So if you want to be a volunteer on a guzzler build, you still need to contact the Department of Wildlife, and NBU will let you know this as well. Yep. And you still have to fill out all of the, well, it's not a ton, but you still have to fill out the volunteer forms.
Right, right. And that's that 2 to 1 hours deal
exactly,
or whatever it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And just make sure, you know, going through the process, like there are several builds this coming year that are restricted because they have to helicopter everybody into the site.
Right.
So it's
you
just can't show up and be like, all right, in my flip flops and shorts with a bocce ball in my hand, like, hey, let's do this.
That's how I build guzzlers.
That's how I build them. So those are going to have restrictions as of like children going.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Certain ages, number of people.
Yeah, all of that. Yeah. All of that's going to play. So find a guzzler you want to participate in. Mm-hmm. Find out what the restrictions are. Get a hold of NDAO or NBU and fill out the proper forms. Get everything all set up. Get yourself on the list because a lot of these guzzler builds, the volunteer fill up really quick. Now, and I'll tell you, NBU makes some great food.
Oh, yeah. The dinners are fantastic.
They're amazing.
Here's what I'm sorry, I should have specified. I mean like those small game guzzler things.
Generally not.
No, you don't take volunteers for that stuff.
I mean,
they
will. If the volunteer's like, man, I really want to get out there and try doing some of these, they'll let you. They'll like, yeah, man, come along. No problem.
Here's where
they're not going to advertise it. They don't generally advertise the small game stuff and maintenance and things like that because those can generally be done pretty quick with the seasonal guzzler crews.
College kids.
Yeah. I mean, there's a maintenance crew too in some of the regions where that's what they do. They have a list. And this is the beauty about going out and taking pictures and sending information to NDAO when you see a guzzler that's in disrepair, because then they know what to bring out to the field.
Oh, right, you right.
Know, they know, okay, we need some pipe, we need some clamps, we need this, that, we need a new drinker, that one's smashed, whatever it might be. And then those crews go out and they just start down the list and they just start doing the repairs required. And the beauty is some of these smaller game guzzlers and some of the smaller units, they can add water to them. I mean, they'll have water tanks.
Right,
they
right.
Kind of like prime them.
Yeah. Top them off, or fill them.
That kind of thing, yeah.
All right, hey, we have got to take a quick break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Shooting Performance Institute for sponsoring the show. And I almost asked this over the break, Dave, but I wanted to put you on the spot on air. Is the guzzler maintenance crew thing in some areas for NDAO, is that like a full-time gig and that's their only responsibility?
No, it's a summer seasonal thing.
Never mind. All right.
You were looking for a career change?
That sounded ideal to me. I was like, I can rip around, fix guzzlers, and just hang out in the hills?
Hang out and check out critters and...
Call me. I'm done.
I'm out.
That sounds good.
I'm out. Evans Broadcasting's for sale.
It's a state job?
We're out.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. So just a seasonal gig.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Fair enough. Now... let's tie some of this into, you know, hot button topics still going on, the public land sale and the public land debate, the guzzler impact of that.
It can end up being fairly significant because as we were talking earlier that these potential land sales are still on the books. The amount of sale is for the 11 Western states. It can range anywhere from 2.2 to 3.3 million acres to be sold. And of that, Nevada potentially, and the numbers aren't out like hard numbers or anything. They just kind of laid percentages out, like this may be the possible percentage. Nevada's looking at potentially between 400 and 500,000 acres of that 2 to 3 million.
Good chunk.
So that's a big chunk. And with that, so anyone can vie to purchase this land.
Well,
your average person like you and me and 98% of the people living in the 11 Western states can't afford to purchase these large blocks of hundreds of acres at a time. I mean, they're not selling them at a half an acre lot.
Anyone can own a yacht too, Dave.
Yeah.
But
same deal. Yeah. but a lot of the land's primary selling is for energy development, private real estate, and non-public recreational development, which means like ski resorts and off-roading stuff.
Track complexes.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Timber harvesting and grazing. Those are the three primary land purposes for sale.
I can't see timber harvesting being a huge one in Nevada.
That's like you're probably talking Oregon, Montana.
Right.
That kind of stuff. Ours would definitely be energy development and then private real estate, like housing.
Yep.
Housing was a big one. Housing and commercial recreation.
I think that housing thing was, you know, taking us, the unwashed masses, for granted and trying to really lean into that housing thing because it's kind of a universal, whether or not you're out protesting ICE right now or you are, you know, at a 9 to 5 because you're employed. Do you like how I separated the political parties by that?
Exactly. Perfect.
But no, either side of the aisle can agree that, man, housing prices are ridiculous and it is going to, we're feeling the pinch.
Yeah. But using this,
it's like, insane.
You would have to be completely blind to think, because they do, you know, they on their speeches in relation to public land is like, well, it's to bring down housing prices. Yeah,
You know what?
you're going to build houses out in Gabs Valley?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Yeah.
Heck, if you want, like, I think Mina and Luna, those two little, they're for sale.
Yeah. Like, you can buy the whole town.
Buy the whole town.
Yeah.
You know, there's a spot. There's a reason why folks aren't way out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. So again, I think the housing thing, that was the Washington doublespeak thing where it was like, oh, this is for housing. No, come on. But I will say the private recreation thing, I know they're pushing that ski area in the Rubies.
Yes, big time.
That
big
one
time.
Could land on our doorstep for sure.
So years ago when they sold some of the land during the SNPLMA funding stuff, 47.8 acres was sold just on the edge of Las Vegas.
47.8
acres. Take a guess how much it was sold for. And it was a developer that purchased it, you know, low-income house, or just for helping the housing economy.
47,800?
47.8 acres. That's all.
Okay.
That was sold.
Well, it was sold to a developer in what year?
This was during SNPLMA. So it was probably 2010, 2015-ish or so, I think. I can't
47
I don't remember.
Acres, we'll call it 48 acres outside Vegas.
Yeah.
I don't know, 100 grand or something?
$16 million. $16.4 million. That came to $396,000 an acre. They built McMansions there.
Okay.
And the houses started at $1.4 million. That's helping out the housing economy.
Christ. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So it's like, so when they speak, when they talk about, oh, it's going to help.
Yeah. So, No.
But getting back on track, because we just completely,
we went
down a rabbit hole like no one's business there. But for guzzlers, went down that nasty rabbit hole. So getting back to the public lands effects on guzzler projects
or guzzlers
in general.
Okay.
What it can do is, negatively, it can, transferring that public land to a private ownership, the private owner can, they can remove the guzzler if it doesn't suit their purposes. They can gate things off where you don't have access because it's now private land. Completely remove all public management and maintenance as well as access. It can then also limit the locations in which the state can put guzzlers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So you're changing, if you have a prime location that's within those selling locations and you got to move it a mile down the way, that can have an effect because your studies show that this is the best spot for them. Animals don't know boundaries. So then you may have situations where animals are primarily staying on a person's private lot because now they just bought that guzzler when they buy that fat chunk of land. And it also has an effect on just movements. So one of the big things is future locations for guzzlers, maintenance of guzzlers, and the utility of the guzzler. Like if it's no longer in state ownership,
right,
then the new landowner can do what they wish.
Yeah, it's their land. They can do what they want. You know, that would be ideal is if you could work something into the deal where it's like access to this guzzler. I think of like the Jacek family.
Mm-hmm.
Love them or hate them. I know they're a polarizing figure in Nevada outdoors. But, you know, they'll buy those like 100 yards around a spring or whatever and then buy the spring.
Right.
Why couldn't you work that into like, hey, if you're buying this 2,500 acre swath of this mountainside, hey, there are guzzlers here, here, and here, and this access road in and out, like you cannot do anything with that. If you still want the 2,500 acres or whatever, just realize there's an easement into this guzzler and we will maintain this guzzler. Yeah. I don't see why you couldn't work that into that, but
that sounds reasonable. The thing is, then they can say, well, that's great. You can access the guzzler and the stuff around the guzzler, but nobody can hunt that land.
Yep, that's so valid.
That, or they use the guzzler, and now they can get landowner tax because now they've got a crud of animals coming into
stuck
their
there.
Land.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it becomes an access barrier.
I got
for,
a solution.
A lot of stuff.
Don't sell off public land.
Don't sell off public land. There's that potential of our guzzlers definitely being affected.
Right.
It definitely changes management priorities.
Okay.
Significantly when you start blocking off little quadrants of land because now it's private for wind energy or solar or whatever. So now you are having to, like I said, you have to change your conservation management programs.
Absolutely.
To address that stuff. Public land issue is gnarly.
I'm assuming Mike Lee from Utah will never give it up.
Probably not.
That's
the mountain he's dying on. And there's a lot of information out there that is accessible to anyone that wants to read it. Most people choose not to because they'd prefer listening to social media or something for their information. But there's a lot out there where public land technically can't be sold.
I'm waiting for the punchline here, Dave.
I know. I'm trying to find it here.
Public land technically cannot be sold.
So the
happens all the time.
But the federal government is a trustee, not an owner of that land. The public, the citizens, the actual citizens of the United States are the owners of that public land. The federal government are trustees, not owners. So in trust for current and future citizens is how it's written. Multi-use does not allow liquidation.
I mean, it goes on all the time. And again, and man, I don't know the Jacek family from Adam, but Jaseks do it all the time. They buy up water, springs. They buy public land all the time in Nevada.
I'm just telling you, this is what I've read from the government website in relation to federal and state land regulations.
I want to make a point on the public land sale deal here in Northern Nevada, specifically like Washoe County. So do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. Thank you to Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. We're going to jump right into it because, man, we could have broken up either one of these subjects into a full show. However, over the break, we got talking about it. If anybody out there knows or has any insight into how some of these people buy like a 50-yard stretch around a spring and just buy that, how they go about that. I can't see the federal government transferring that to a state and then the state just sells this spring.
This little spring piece, yeah.
Yeah, but if people that hunt Washoe County like we do, and especially far north, you know, going north of Via, the Sheldon out there, all that.
Yeah.
That area is littered with those Jassics, the Rumney. There's all these little parcels that are just the spring, and then surrounding that little private square is BLM land again.
Yeah.
It does not make a lick of sense to me. So if you're sitting at home right now yelling at your radio saying, you guys are idiots, this is how it's done, you're the person I want to talk to.
Yes. Yeah.
Send us a text, 775-884-9910, or I'll give out my personal email address, Henry, H-E-N-R-Y, at ebc.media. Send me an email. I'd love to have you on the show and pick your brain.
Oh, man, it'd be great if you have in-depth stuff here, because one of the things is these sales are permanent. I mean, the federal government does not get land back. They don't buy land back. Once it's gone, it's gone. And then once these public sales, they are overwhelmingly benefit developers, mining interests, and landowners.
Yeah.
And the general public, it's a one-time revenue deal. For what do we get? We get
pennies on the dollar, realistically.
The buyers get permanent control of this land. And for that one-time purchase, we lose our public access, we lose habitat, and we lose management flexibility.
Yeah.
Completely for a one-time purchase.
Yes.
And it's never going to come back.
Yeah.
Once it's gone, it's gone.
And like you said, I mean, it's that old stumbling over dollars to pick up dimes. Like,
exactly.
Oh, you want to sell this piece of land for, I say pennies on the dollar, but realistically not what it's going to be worth at some future point.
Right.
They'll sell it off and it's like, you know, a talking point for a local politician to say, I decreased the deficit by this much with the sale of this. And it's like, man, if you had hung on to that.
Yeah.
That was a bad business move, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I don't know how the sale procedure goes. If they buy a big old swath of land and, oh, yeah, we're going to use it for renewable. And then, well, yeah, that's not going to work out. So we're going to sell it to something else.
Yeah. Mining, or whatever. They'll find a use for it. Yeah.
You know, and the loss to wildlife is huge when you're depending on how this is stolen. So you got the fragmentation of habitat increases.
Yeah.
Then you got access and maintenance is almost gone. And then long-term planning for any type of wildlife or habitat consideration is almost impossible to predict because if they're selling it over time, you don't have any way of really planning any of these programs.
Absolutely not.
You know, when they're selling 500,000 acres in patches, it just doesn't really take into consideration the people who actually own it.
Have you seen a new revised map? I actually posted the last map as far as what was at stake to be sold in Nevada. Have you seen an updated one or are they just going same old, same old?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen a new map or anything.
That's what's proposed.
Yeah, that's like when I was trying to do my searches on the potential percentages of, of this going to like what 11 states. It was really vague. You know, it just stated that the land, potentially this amount.
Yeah.
Nevada's the high one because we're primarily all federally owned.
Right.
And we're prime for renewable energy.
So we're going to have to sell it to find out what we've lost. To quote Nancy Pelosi on the, what was that, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare? Yes. Yeah. We got to pass a bill to find out what's in it.
Yeah.
So once we sell it, we'll figure out just how screwed we royally are. Yeah.
How much we screwed our citizens. Yeah.
Yeah, no thanks.
So the beauty is there is something in there where foreign entities cannot participate in the purchases.
Yeah, man, I don't buy that. I mean, okay, so yeah, maybe it's not going to be a foreign entity, but look at like the Hunter Biden. Man, you're really getting me on a political kick today, Dave. Look at like the Hunter Biden Burisma thing. You can't tell me there's not some influence peddling that goes on into these big like mining deals and stuff as far as foreign interests leveraging American counterparts. Yeah, it might not be owned by a Chinese businessman, but he's the one paying the bills.
Paying for it.
Exactly. You know. Yeah, get out of here with this.
I don't know. I don't know how they're going about the sales, but they are. There's got to be some nexus that is allowing, over the years, these public land sales to occur. Yeah.
Well, and now you bring that up. What about the geothermal in Nevada? A majority of those geothermal things are owned by an Indian company. Dots, not feathers.
I don't know.
So how's that work?
Those are probably, that land may be not sold, may it's just leased.
Oh, see, there's always a workaround.
They don't make these rules and regulations without creating loopholes in them. Yeah. I mean, they say the general public may own, technically, you know, in air quotes, own the land,
which we
probably technically really don't. I'm sure there's some clause somewhere in there, some property clause saying, well, yeah, it's, we call it public land, but in the fine print, congressional authority has, you know, the rights to do as they wish with it.
They'll do what they
there's,
want.
There's definitely clauses somewhere and little backdoor what have you. So, I mean, they're not selling it just because the general public's stupid, because we're not, at least most of us.
Well, I have my days for sure. But
here's the thing.
There's
days I want to be.
Yeah.
There's so many days I just want to be. I just can just clock me in the head. Let me be just that dude for the day. I just
ignorance is bliss.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is ideal.
I mean, I want to be that dude once in a while.
My problem is people will tell me stuff and I think I'll nod and agree, but then I think about it for a couple seconds, like the foreign interest thing.
God.
And I'm like, well, wait a sec though. I know for a fact a lot of that geothermal stuff is India owned.
Yeah.
So how's that play? And then you get thinking about it. So yeah, anyway, Dave, I would love to just wake up one day and go, I don't know, man. I've got no idea and I have no cares in the world.
Yeah.
Life's simple.
Anyway, it's a Sunday. It is a gorgeous day out there. I hope while you've been listening to us, you're either cleaning a gun, checking your backpack, or tuning your bow, because you're going to go outside now after listening to us and energizing you. You're going to get outside and you're going to go have some fun.